Today, forecasting home price falls is a mug's game, but... Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. The airwaves are full of property doom and gloom, and it's interesting to see the narrative turn from property investors have no real impact on home prices to now, prices will drop substantially. In my earlier show, I explained why actually a fall in property prices is a good thing despite the horror being expressed by many. It's worth remembering that the gap between home prices and capacity to pay has never been greater. And these days, standard affordability calculations are based on two full incomes, not a single one, plus a bit. My surveys reveal a consistent rise in disposable income to mortgage payments. Now, the ratio is around 40% or more, and renters are in the same boat. Another signal about the trajectory of home prices is sales listings. Data from SQM via Antipodean Micro suggests a significant rise in both the major markets of Sydney and Melbourne. Look more closely, and we see first, more property hanging around on the market for longer. Second, a rise in investment properties where net yields are significantly negative. And thirdly, a specific problem in and around Melbourne caused by the impost from landlords, including higher land tax and other state changes to the investment market. And we're also now seeing falls in yields from stamp duty, which hit the states too as transaction volumes fall. Ahead, auction action will be interesting to parse as we'll see a tussle between some vendors desperate to sell, while prospective purchasers may well stand on the sidelines. And of course, the long weekend may not help either. CBA showed that while auction volumes nationally are running at high levels compared to the same time in 2024 and 2025, auction clearance rates are tracking way below both 2024 and 2025, suggesting that demand may have collapsed, especially in Sydney and Melbourne suburbs with more expensive housing. They wrote, "Declines in housing prices have tended to be largest in areas with higher median house prices. 3-month housing price declines have been the largest in Melbourne's inner and outer east and Sydney's eastern and northwestern suburbs." It's worth noting that these suburbs are priced outside of the federal government's 5% first home buyer deposit scheme caps and have already been most heavily impacted by the rise in mortgage rates and the resulting reduction in borrowing power. The decline comes amid 3 interest rate increases so far in 2026, they said, higher oil prices and lower consumer confidence, and the proposed tax policy changes for housing investors in the 2026-27 Commonwealth budget, they said. Now, we are getting a spray of forecasts about the future trajectory of home prices, and frankly, they're all over the shop, from no change, on average, to falls of 10% or even more. And of course, the truth is that individual markets and property types will behave differently, and it's clear that standalone houses in particular are likely to be more resilient than, say, apartments. And the risks to the downside are greater in the more over-leveraged markets of Sydney and Melbourne than some others. CBA came out with their house price forecasts following the federal budget, saying we expect softness in the housing market to continue in the near term as the impact of the tax policy changes, higher interest rates, and lower confidence continues to push price growth lower. They suggest that Sydney and Melbourne are now experiencing heavy price corrections this year, with Sydney projected to decline by 6% and Melbourne by 7%. But with a rebound in 2027 of 3%, driven by 2 RBA rate cuts in 2027. CBA has tended to forecast RBA cash rates below the market and have missed the mark over time, in my view. And they also estimate that the changes to negative gearing and CGT announced in the federal budget on cash flows for property investors will be the equivalent to somewhere between 135 and 165 basis points of monetary tightening for Sydney, but with lesser impacts for other markets. Now, it's worth reflecting on previous periods where home prices have fallen and Catality produced a neat chart to show that the largest decline actually was 8.2% between 2017 and 2019, when of course we had the Royal Commission into Banking, which delivered very little in substantive change, and also the APRA investment lending crackdown, which was reversed later, and which of course was reincarnated recently with bells on via the loan-to-value limits on the investment sector. Now, when you write down all the headwinds which are now troubling the property market, it's likely falls will be greater, perhaps well beyond the 8.2% in some places. We know that housing has never been so unaffordable. We have high interest rates driven by the RBA cash rate and higher bond yields, which are a proxy for fixed rate loans, and market expectations of higher rates ahead. And we have weakening economic activity. In that data center investments apart, the economy is hardly firing, with GDP per capita in retreat and real productivity through the floor, as much of the economy is government funded and protected. Compare unemployment rates with the private sector, for example. And we have rising unemployment, especially among young people, and the impact of the Gulf War are yet to hit. The recent policy changes around CGT and negative gearing will also depress momentum as people try to figure out the implications as the legislation is shepherded through Parliament. And of course, there the question is, what will the Greens do in the Senate? Borrowing power is falling thanks to the higher rates and budget changes, so credit will be less available, and some may end up in negative equity or unemployment, which could force them to sell. On the supply side, new construction is not keeping up as builders go bust, and migration, which is now forecast higher, it's still below recent peaks, which may lift demand a little in the short term, but not as much as previously. But there are at least three other factors to consider when you're thinking about making forecasts for price movements. The first is what I call behavioural economics, which relates to how households may respond to the economic changes. For example, will they sit on the sidelines or sell? And how does this vary by location, household type, and demographic segmentation? What will first-time buyers and investors do? How will downtraders behave? I could go on. Many economists actually appear to largely ignore these rather important factors. The second element is the assumption about growth in money supply, because more dollars printed leads to the devaluation of the value of the dollar, meaning you need more of them to buy something compared with last month or last year. Currently, broad money supply is rising fast, supported by higher government debt, high household debt, and of course, central bank bounce of money printing. Just remember that the price to income ratios are corrected for inflation, so it is certainly not the only element driving asset price growth, but it remains a significant element and possibly a one-way street. And of course, that is inflationary as well. And inflation is very high at the moment. The third element is the scope and intent of government intervention and response to falling prices. In previous episodes of weakness, they came in with big taxpayer-supported programs to assist specific sectors of the property market. Will they do that again? Or will they pump migration higher to try to stoke demand? Or will they provide additional support to the construction sector to build more apartments? Now, you can probably imagine that trying to put all of these factors into a model and then project future price movement state by state and property type by property type is pretty complex and difficult. Indeed, good luck with that. You will probably be wrong. That said, the DFA core market model does attempt to take all of those factors into account and a few others, for example, like exchange rates. And then we try and work out what may happen. But this is why I talk about scenarios. And as a result, there are a wide range of potential outcomes. On the best case for home prices, there is still some scope for small rises over the next 3 years net. But the downside alternatives are looking pretty concerning because here the ingredients could be in place for a significant price correction. In the worst case, down more than 30%. Of course, the risk is lazy journalists pick up only the worst case scenario and make a story from that myopic viewpoint. I know, because I've been the victim of that myself over the years. Now, I will go into these scenarios and findings in more detail in a later post, but for now, these generic property price forecasts are worth, well, about as much as, say, half a kilo of hot air. Their projections may get views and clicks, but generally, I think forecasting house prices is a mug's game. But if we talk scenarios instead, this can provide more insights and sensitivities, but scenarios are not the same as a forecast. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.